Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about writing in life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers all the way from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA, as well as the Early Writers Conference at PNWA.org. You know, one of the most commonly offered pieces of writing advice is to write what you know. Now, generally speaking, this is not to be taken literally, because, of course, if you want to write fantasy fiction, for instance, or science fiction or historical romance, then you are not writing what you know personally, but what you know that you love. So that's usually the way that goes. But in the case of today's guest, suspense author Chris Allen, this writing what you know is both sort of figurative and literal. He began his career actually as a soldier, became a commissioned officer, ended up serving with the Royal Australian Regiment, and was a paratrooper, and was deployed in Southeast Asia, Africa, and Central America. This guy's been around the world. He was a humanitarian aid worker for Care International during the 1999 East Timor emergency, and after September 11th became involved in the Australian government protective security. Well, now he's living a little less dangerous life. He's writing suspense novels, including Defender and Hunter. This is the Intrepid series. And now he's actually risking being on the air with me right now. Chris, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Bill. How are you? Thanks so much for that introduction.
Well, my pleasure. I should say to our guests, our listeners, that, yes, good morning. I'm speaking at 2 p.m. Pacific time here in the States, but you are talking to me from Australia, and it's the future. It's Wednesday, tomorrow.
Of course. I'm
what's going on?
From the future, and I should.
Oh, my God.
I should have said good afternoon, shouldn't I? Sorry.
That's right. Well, so, Chris, as I mentioned, you had a very active beginning to your working professional life. You were a soldier. You did a lot of security work, and now you are a writer. You are a bit more docile. How has that transition been for you?
Look, it's an interesting question. I think I just reached a point in my life where I was actually quite ready to step away from all of the activity of my sort of earlier years, and I'd always had this passion to write. And it just, you know, the career took over and so on. And so I was more focused on the military and law enforcement things I was doing. But now I'm in my 40s. I married a couple of years ago for the first time, and we have some young boys. And I've felt very settled for the first time in a very long time. And so the writing has come very naturally.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting thing. We say we had a passion to write. But describe that to me, because obviously you had other things to priority in your life. When did you recognize you were interested in writing? Did it go all the way back to your childhood?
Yes, it did. At school I started reading, when you get to that point, I think 13 or 14, sometime around then, you start discovering the books that you'll really like through your life. Yeah. And for me, they were the action books of the time, and people like, obviously, Ian Fleming's a huge influence for me, but people like Alastair McLean and Frederick Forsyth and Clive Cussler, you know, I've been reading them for years and years, and I always felt that one day I would love to do that. And so for me, it was more about, I had a go at things when I was a child at school, and I started writing, and it was rubbish. And I thought that it would come naturally, but it didn't. Yeah, I know, that's right. But there were some kids that were really bright, and they'd write these fantastic pieces of work. But for me, it was, I think I was a little bit too sort of engaged in visualizing these things that were in my head and not necessarily transferring them to the page very well. So it dates right back to then, and I guess then I went off in search of some adventure to try and coax along the creative side of me. But then, as I say before, you know, the career kind of takes over, and before you know it, you've had this passion that you've hung on to for a very, very long time. And you just have to reach a point in your life where you're ready to start it. And it's different for everyone, I guess.
You know, it's interesting to me, Chris. So you did a lot of work in security and with law enforcement, as you described, where you're helping people physically, right? I mean, that's
yeah.
your job, ultimately, is to protect them physically. But I've always looked at writing as a service. I really did, that you're trying to offer something to another person that's valuable, but it comes in a different form. Does that connection make sense to you?
Yes, it does, Bill. Yeah, it absolutely does.
Because for some boy somewhere in Australia or America, maybe he's going to discover Chris Allen like you discovered Frederick Forsyth.
Yeah, it's so nice of you to say that, because that has been one of the things that's been stuck in my mind for a long time. And I often say to friends, if I can provide the enjoyment and the escapism to some young guy that is the equivalent of what I was at, you know, way back when, and have that young guy really enjoy my books, young guy or girl, by the way, I'm finding that we've got probably 50% of my readership is women, and I'm so thrilled about that, because I just didn't realize. But but just talking about my personal experience, if I can provide that same feeling and sense to a young person that and they take my books as their favorites through their life, I'd be absolutely chuffed. You know,
well, here's
I
the
really
thing.
Would.
I already know this, because this is how I understand life to work. It's already happened. Somewhere it's already happened. And I know it might be staggering to you. I mean, you've got a couple books out there, but it's already happened. Somewhere it's already begun, where someone has said, oh, Mike, that you turned someone on to reading. I guarantee you.
Yeah, that's nice. It's a nice thought. It really is. And, you know, I think that's the big thing for me, that I had such enjoyment from reading these books and having these adventures. And I mean, I grew up in Perth in Western Australia, and back in the 70s, Perth was such a sleepy hollow, and still to this day, you know, it's a beautiful city, right on the Indian Ocean. It's a fantastic place to live. We obviously live in Sydney at the moment, but my family is still over in Perth. But it was so far removed, it felt, from the world. You know, I must have, you know, might as well have been on another planet. And so a lot of my childhood kind of visions and dreams of the world I derive from books, you know, and I love that.
And of course, in your work in law enforcement and the military, you got to see quite a bit of that world in the end, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, and I feel very fortunate for that, because you know, early on in my career, I got a year in attached to the New Zealand Army. It's actually where I did my officer commissioning training, and that was my first time overseas. And I think I was about 20 when I went over there. That was amazing. And then later on, I was, as you say, around the world. I had two incredible years attached to the British Parachute Regiment in Aldershot during the 90s. And from there, I got to see a lot more of the world. So I think that's kind of part of what I've invested into the stories, to a large extent, that kind of experience. But also, because of the books I enjoyed, I tried to draw that experience into some escapism too. I didn't want them to be, I didn't want the stories to be necessarily, you know, autobiographical or, you know, training manuals. I want them to be escapist fiction. So, I drew on a lot of that experience.
I was thinking about you as I was preparing for this interview, and I did some martial arts for years back in my 20s and 30s, and I would watch movies, for instance, where I would watch a fight, and these guys would be slugging it out with each other. And I think, man, if you hit a guy full on with your fist in his jaw, you might break your fist, your hand might break, and you for sure would knock him out. That would be the end of the fight for both of you, probably. And so I thought, right? Because that's the reality of it. And I thought, so how does Chris work writing suspense when he knows the reality of what it is to be in these dangerous situations, as opposed to the sort of narrative tropes that we're used to keep suspense moving and so on. How do you balance those two realities in your mind?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I guess, as you say, if you're writing things, you know, really factually, then they'd be over and done with in a matter of a couple of seconds. So I guess one of the things I try to do is put a situation into the perspective of, as much as I can, of the reader, so that try and give them the experience of it and make it as interesting as possible just by keeping the pace of things moving along. And so it doesn't necessarily need to be, you know, 3 or 4 pages of describing somebody in a fight, one-on-one, but it's about the emotion of it and the movement and the surroundings and, you know, judging what to do next. Those kinds of things, I think, are what compels a reader forward rather than, you know, literally the blow-by-blow 37 punches that would never really happen in reality.
When you write action scenes, it's over so fast, it's weird. If you watch a fight, I've seen a couple actual fights, they aren't very dramatic at all. They're just weird and like wrestling matches, really. But when you're writing action scenes, do you take yourself back to when you were involved in things and try and draw upon those feelings and what you went through, or do you want to cut yourself off from that time in your life now?
Well, you know, I'm really discovering something, Bill, that in the first two books, I kind of held myself at a distance from recall, if you like. You know, like it was obviously an inherent part of what I was writing and all that kind of stuff. But becoming more comfortable with the writing process, I'm writing Avenger, the third one in the Alex Morgan series now, and I am absolutely finding that I am really digging in deep for this one, and the experience of writing it is much more personal, and that's been like something very interesting for myself to discover, that I can allow myself to get so much into the story and the character that I'm physically and emotionally affected by the process.
Yeah, well, that to me is one of the best parts of writing. And I think always one of the challenges of writing very suspenseful scenes is to remember, this is my rule, it may not apply to you, but this is one of my rules, is that you don't want to write, it's not actually what happens that matters, but what it feels like when it's happening. Because human beings, not just to be chased by the villain, but what does it feel like to be chased by the villain? That's the great challenge for the writer, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Otherwise, you might as well just be doing a storyboard that's got no emotion on it.
That's
right. And readers aren't going to invest in that.
Well, because if somebody pulled a gun on you, it would be a different experience for you than for me. You know, because I've never had that happen. Yeah. So it would be new, and I'd be very confused, and I probably would feel fear on a level that you mightn't, because you would. So that would be an interesting contrast, for instance.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Look, I think that's you opened the show by saying, you know, writing what you know at times, and I guess that's people still have an emotional reaction to things they're familiar with, as you know, and so it's just about how you process that. And I guess I've been, because I'm enjoying writing them so much, I'm enjoying the process of bringing a lot more of the central characters out, like Alex Morgan, who's the principal, and then some of his colleagues in the organisation and other characters. And so, you know, I think when I wrote the first two, I was drawing on a number of friends and people I'm close to that I know well to build up the ensemble cast of characters.
Right.
And with Morgan, he's so personal to me, and and there are other people in Alex Morgan too. I just consider myself to be the kind of loose vehicle that I've based it upon. But digging in there was a bit harder in the first two, but this time I think I'm discovering more about Morgan and putting a bit more of myself in there and understanding how he's evolving and reacting to things.
Well, it'll only make it better, I think. You know,
I feel good about it.
Yeah? You're excited by the evolution?
Yeah, sorry, Bill,
Well, I was going to say that sometimes it's a funny thing, but sometimes the people who learn things, or the things that we have to learn the most deliberately, are the things we're best at teaching. So you described that when you were a schoolboy and you first tried to write, you were mostly just seeing the things in your head, probably like a movie, and sort of just transcribing them, whereas these other kids you thought were bright were good. So, but now you've moved and you've begun becoming a professional writer, and so you must have learned now how to actually translate those images into words. What are the biggest lessons you learned in doing that, making that transition from just seeing the things to actually having them translate to the page?
Yeah, well, it's exactly what you've just raised. It's what I've learned is it's more about the emotional connection for the reader. You know, the idea is I want this series to be an enduring series for people. I want it to be one that they either keep on their electronic bookshelf forever and a day, or they physically put them up on the shelves of their study or their house. And to do that, you need to create an emotional connection with the person. And that's the experience that I've had of my favourites, and I think that's common for everybody that loves to read. And so I've really honed over these books. And, of course, as you know, you go through editorial processes and you're constantly reading and editing and you know, your agent reads it and the publisher reads it. And so I've really learned to hone that emotional side. And I guess that's why because I'm in the middle of this third book as we speak, I'm really enjoying bringing a lot more of that to the forefront now. Yeah. And that's what I've learned, that I think as a child, I would not for a moment say that kids can't do it, because there's some exceptionally bright kids out there. I just wasn't one of them. And it was trying to create an emotional connection just wasn't there for me as a boy. But obviously a few decades down the track, I've had a bit more life experience and able to convey that. I hope so anyway.
I think it has to do with being willing to slow down too, because you know I was a very athletic boy, and I was a writer too. That was my main thing, but I wanted to go.
Yeah.
And you know, and you probably did too. You probably had a lot of physical energy that you were willing to go into the military and such. But to write, you have to be able to say, "Let's stop, let's get quiet."
Yes, you do.
And you know, and that's a different set of skills.
It is, and it's not just about in that moment, is it? It's about a time in your life when you're actually able to focus and dedicate yourself to that process, because it takes so much.
It does.
To do that and to write, it really does, doesn't it?
It does. It requires a willingness to be quiet with yourself, I think, and be comfortable with that quietness. You know?
Yeah, and shut out the noise too, I think.
Yeah.
It's important.
Can you do that?
I can now.
You can now?
Do you write in the morning? Now. Yeah. I write whenever I can. We've got two small boys. Our son Morgan is almost four, and our son Rhett is about to turn one. So as you can imagine, we have a quite noisy household.
My God.
So I try and write whenever I can around the boys, and you know, when we've got some time. I'll write late at night, or I'll write early in the morning, and then if we've got time during the day and it's peaceful, then I lock myself in my study where I am now and just get on with it.
Yeah, because, you know, you have to be able to – people, when I go and teach, they say, how do you focus? How do you do it? I don't know how to – you know, and I say, it's not easy, but you have to give yourself time to quiet the thoughts of, you know, there's your working, living – marital thoughts and lives, which is, you know, very busy mind, but you have to learn to quiet to let your attention sink down to the level of the story, don't you?
You sure do. And it's funny, there are times where I say to my wife Sarah that, you know, when I venture out of the writing cave, as we say, and I go upstairs and I'm having lunch with the family or a cup of tea or something, and I'll be quiet, you know. And Sarah now knows that it's I'm still in the story, and I'm reacting and I'm interacting with my family and still having fun. But when I'm in the midst of writing a story, it's very, very difficult, particularly, as I said earlier, that I'm really investing a lot more of myself into the development of Alex Morgan and Intrepid and so on.
Yeah.
That it's quite a personal journey, And so when you go upstairs or out and you're with friends, it takes a bit of time to just lock it off where it needs to stay until you get back to it. But it's always there. As Arthur Conan Doyle used to say, it's in the lumber room of my subconscious.
Oh, hell yeah. You know, we have a caller. We have a caller, Chris,
yep.
who would like to ask you a question. I believe I know who it is. I think I recognize Jeffrey. Is that you?
It is, Bill. How are you, sir?
I'm fabulous. Do you have a question
Another
for Mr. Chris Allen?
Another interview, everyone, all your listeners must run out immediately and pick up Chris Allen's amazing novels and Write Within Yourself, an author's companion by Mr. William Knauer.
Thank
and
you.
Chris, you're very welcome. As far as your military service and that sort of regimented routine, has that been able to be translated or transferred, mm-hmm. not necessarily to the pages, but to your daily writing regimen routine?
Oh, what a good question.
Thank you,
It
Bill.
Is a great question. And is it Jeffrey, is it?
Oh, yes, it's Jeffrey. I just put him on hold, but yeah, it's Jeffrey.
I'm sorry, yeah. So good afternoon to Jeffrey. Thanks so much for the question. Yeah, I think to a large extent I do pull on the discipline from the military where, you know, when a task has to be done, you just have to get it done. One thing I do find is that I write better under pressure. And so if I have a deadline, I can really lock down. And I guess that's a byproduct of a busy household with young children and trying to find the time. And then when you absolutely know that I've got to get a task done, I get it done. And I think the discipline from the military does assist me a lot in having that process of planning the way I write, mapping out the stories, and so on.
You know, the difference, though, it seemed to me between the military and writing is that in the military, although some might argue this is there is no difference, but in the military, in general, your directions are coming from someone else is giving you orders and you're following them, even if you're an officer, this yet another officer above you. Whereas in writing,
yep.
there ain't nobody giving you nothing. You are alone.
I think you're right, Bill. You know, there's always somebody above you that you know, that's giving you directions. But I guess, I mean, I was a major when I was in, so you do still get used to the a certain amount of autonomy where they have a thing called, in my day anyway, called the commander's intent. So you'd be given a task, and then it'd be necessary as the officer in charge to interpret that task and then implement it. So I guess that the ability to think a bit more laterally and come up with something that's and then convey that through physical orders or written orders or, you know, inspiring people to do things, I guess it translates across to writing too in that way. So there are fors and against, you know, it's very different, but you still have to convey an idea and get people to want to do it. And in the case of a writer, you get people to want to read it and enjoy it, I guess.
But there is this quality to writing that I think is not dissimilar, which is that have you had the experience of writing? You've got your plan for what you want that scene to be, but then something seems to come to you, and it wasn't really. It's hard to really call it your idea, and yet you are there implementing it nonetheless. You're almost like that major again. Have you had that experience?
If I've understood you correctly, I think I'm having that now with Avenger, because I wrote Defender, the first one, over a number of years, because as I think with many writers, your first one, you know, is a work in progress for a long time until you finally get that final product. Not for everybody, but certainly the way that I have had the experience. With Hunter, I really mapped it out, and I almost like a game plan, you know, chapter by chapter,
right.
And then I allowed the creativity to evolve within the chapters. But with Avenger, I think having the experience of the first two under my belt, I'm much more working in concepts. And so I'm giving a broad brush for myself for the opening kind of quarter of the book, and breaking it down that way, and then I'm just sitting down and letting it flow. And I'm really enjoying this process much more. It's allowing me to be more creative.
Yeah, it's really it's quite an alive experience, at least for me. I've now come to liken it to a relationship, because I feel that my imagination is this, well, you can call it whatever you want, but it's this awareness that I'm in relationship with, that I'm asking for ideas and it's giving and so on and back and forth, not so much just me plugging away like a carpenter.
That's really interesting. I understand completely what you're talking about, because it is almost like, you know, when you wake up in the morning, you know, as I just have here in Sydney, and you're not really aware of what you're going to write today. You've got an idea, but it's not until you really tap into that relationship that you have with that writing person that you'll actually determine what's going to come out and how you'll respond to those thoughts and what you'll. I thought that's a great thought, Bill. I think you've nailed it that way.
Lisa Gardner. Well, it's something that's come to me after doing it for years and years, but I've sort of accepted that that's what's going on. But Lisa Gardner, I thought, said it really well. You were talking about waking up and not knowing what you're going to write. And she said, and that can be tough for some writers, that there's that unknown. But Lisa Gardner said, the job of the writer is to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. With the always not knowing, you know, because you don't really get to know. Much as you
no,
like
you don't.
It.
No matter how much you plan, you really don't until you sit down and it comes out and you see it on the page.
All right. Let me ask you this. We still got a couple of minutes left. When did you start writing? When did you first begin writing Defender? Which was your first, right?
It was. So when I got back from East Timor, which was early in 2000. I thought then that I'd reached a point where I could start, to coin a phrase, putting pen to paper. And so it was really over the process of my mid-30s that I started writing it through the 2000s. And there were a number of iterations that evolved. But then...
But you started about 10 years ago, give or take.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
and then
in those 10 years...
You know, I was involved in... Yeah.
In those 10 years, so think back over that and finish this sentence for me. This will be my last question for you, Chris. Writing has taught me anything. It has taught me what?
It's taught me to trust my instincts and just let the process happen.
Yes, trust. You know, Chris, that is the number one answer. I ask that question to almost everybody I've interviewed, and that is the number one answer. Trust.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. And you'd think a man who has faced all this, who's lived the life you had, would have maybe learned that. But I think you can never learn it enough in your life to trust. I think the depth of trust just goes down and down and down.
I think we learn throughout life, and you know, no matter what we've done, and when you take on new challenges, then there's a new perspective that you get on things, and you have to learn and determine how you're going to react to those changes in your life and what you do with them, whether it's in the sort of action side of the earlier years I've had, or in this new side as a writer. But, yeah, trusting your instincts is important.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, thank you so much. This has been nothing but a pleasure.
Likewise, Bill. I'm so grateful, and I hope that everyone enjoyed the chat. I certainly did, and I appreciate the time.
Oh, my pleasure indeed. So, everybody, you're going to want to run out and get yourself Defender and Hunter. And in the meantime, trust your instincts. Just like Chris says, you really cannot go wrong. Actually, I'll be talking next Tuesday to Sonora Jha, an American Indian novelist. But this Friday, special Friday edition, I'll be speaking to poet John Fitzgerald. Until then, everybody, I want you to do what you love, trust what you love, write what you love, do all that.